of the series, number talk, What Buddhists Believe. And we are very fortunate and honored to have with us here again, Brother Ananda Fong. And today's topic is, I've been here before. Okay, I'll give you a short profile of our speaker today, Brother Ananda Fong. Brother Ananda Fong was a student, facilitator, and former deputy principal of the Buddhist Institute Sunday Dharma School at the Buddhist Mahavihara Brickfields, KL. He was also the former principal of Bandar Utama Buddhist Society, Sunday Dharma School, and BAPS president. He is a tutor in Nalanda Institute Malaysia Certificate and the Higher Certificate in Buddhist Studies programs, and was a tutor in the Diploma of Buddhism, Buddhist and Pali University of Sri Lanka program held at BMV. He is the director of Pustaka Nalanda, Sri Sedang, which branch office at Nalanda Education and Outreach Centres in KL, JB, Sungai Petani, Kedah. He is also the Honourable Secretary General 2012 to 2016 of the Theravada Buddhist Council of Malaysia, a member of the Malaysian Buddhist Council, Buddhist Consultative Council. He actively promotes the reading and study of the Nikayas and give Dharma sharings regularly at Buddhist centers in the Klang Valley. So let us fold our palms together and sadhu three times to Brother Ananda. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Good morning, one and all. That was a very long introduction. I'm going to send you the shorter version. Okay, today's topic, I've been here before. As you know, Buddhism, we talk about rebirth. And a lot of people confuse that with the term reincarnation. But the only commonality between reincarnation and rebirth is that we come back again. Okay, but how we come back, there are differences between reincarnation and rebirth. Buddhists talk about rebirth, not reincarnation. Hindus talk about reincarnation. Okay, there is a difference there. Anyway, for those who are actually following what Buddhists believe, please refer to your book by Venerable K. Sri Dhammananda, basically chapter 5 on page 129 that talks about this aspect. Why this topic is important? Because it reference to rebirth and different planes of existence, whether happy states or unfortunate states, frequently are mentioned by the Buddha in the suttas, in the lectures given by the Buddha. So at least you must be familiar with what is all this going on. And of course, many people do not subscribe to this idea, partly because it's a bit far-fetched. Okay, just to imagine, most people assume that this is our only life, you know, born, live a life and die. But unfortunately, there are evidences that show otherwise. But this concept of so-called rebirth is not new in history. Even among the Egyptians, Pythagoras, Plato, the early wise men, and the early Christian church fathers also, they believe in the idea. So basically, the early Bible actually contained concepts of rebirth, but it was officially declared a heresy in the 553 Common Era. Nowadays, we do not use the term AD, BC and AD. The term is called CE. CE to replace AD. CE means Common Era. Starting point is still the same. The numbers are still the same, except instead of AD, you use CE. So it's before Christ. It's called BCE, before Common Era. Okay, this is a new terminology. So if you see AD and BC still used, it means that document has not been updated. Anyway, it was officially declared a heresy in 553 Common Era by the Second Council of Constantinople, okay, which was boycotted by the presiding Pope Vigilius at that time. This is some artistic drawing of the convention and so on. But back to the evidences. Well, this story regarding James Leidinger, story of a little boy in Louisiana, by now quite grown up already. He had memories of being a U.S. Navy fighter pilot in the Second World War. And and it's possibly the best documented case of so-called reincarnation or rebirth in the West. This morning's sharing, whatever examples I show here are all from the Western world, primarily because if you show examples from what they call Middle East and eastwards, a lot of the communities or the cultures there already believe in the idea of reincarnation. So if you show that, I say, of course lah, they already believe. So what kind of evidence is that? So I purposely show evidences from the Western world because they go to church. Current day Christians and whatever Western religions do not believe. And the moment you mention reincarnation, rebirth, they tell you you're talking rubbish. So it becomes more credible when the evidence presented to them, and suddenly they are forced to contend with this evidence, and they come to believe. How it happens, why it happened, that's a different story. But there is, today's session, I'm trying to show you that there is this phenomena. Okay, so we are not here to explain the why and the how it happens. I might also show you the video. This is one video, but there's another video also touching on this, but provide more information still. But I show you the first one.
Move on to our series on the paranormal. 3 out of 4 Americans believe in some kind of paranormal activity. But what about reincarnation, being reborn in the body of another? 1/2 of Americans believe, 1/2 do not. And if you're one of these skeptics, try to explain how a little boy could know specific details about a fighter pilot who lost his life more than 60 years ago. It's a story you have to see to believe.
Okay, this is really tough. I need somebody to help me.
All right, I'm a volunteer. What do you want me to do?
Okay, I'm just going to climb this thing and you have to hold me in case I fall.
Done.
This is James Leiniger at 6, all boy and all spirit.
This is a special plane. It goes in reverse. You don't see a lot of that.
James knows a lot about planes, especially war planes.
What kind of airplane is that?
It's a Corsair.
His parents, Andrea and Bruce Leiniger, say from an early age, James would play with nothing else.
He was obsessed with airplanes. If you look around the house, that's all you'll see. Airplanes, helicopters, aircraft carriers.
But then, when he was 2, the planes James loved suddenly began to give him frequent and frightening nightmares.
I'd wake him up and he'd be screaming and he'd always be laying on his back, kicking his feet up at the ceiling. And I'd say, baby, what were you dreaming about? And he'd say, airplane crash on fire, little man can't get out.
They sound like typical kiddie nightmares, but Andrea says they went on the same way for months. Maybe too much TV. But James was just 2 and his parents say only watching Barney and Teletubbies.
Teletubbies!
And Andrea and Bruce say they weren't watching World War II documentaries or conversing about military history.
This is an F-18?
No, that one.
So what explains the nightmares and James's strange obsession with airplanes?
I talked to my mom about it a lot of times, and my mom had said maybe he's remembering a past life.
What did you say?
Politely, baloney.
But as time went by, Andrea didn't know what to believe. Here's James at age 3, going over a plane as if he's doing a pre-flight check. He would continue to say and do things that were puzzling, like the time his mom bought him a toy airplane.
And I said, oh, look, there's a bomb on the bottom of it. He said, that's not a bomb, Mama, that's a drop tank.
A drop tank?
I'd never heard of a drop tank. I didn't know what a drop tank was.
His parents say between the ages of 2 and 4, James would reveal extraordinary details about the life of a former fighter pilot, James M. Houston, Jr., mostly at bedtime when he was drowsy.
Bruce said, what happened to your plane? He said, it crashed on fire. And Bruce said, why did your airplane crash? And he said, it got shot. And Bruce said, well, who shot your plane? And I'll never forget the look on his face. He went, the Japanese.
So what do you believe now about your son, James?
I believe that he had a past life. I believe that in his past life, he was James M. Houston, Jr. And he came back because he wasn't finished with something. And that's essentially what I believe.
And he's not the only one. This is Anne Barron, the sister of pilot James Houston. She has met the Leiningers and can come up with only one plausible explanation for James's past life memories.
The child was so convincing in coming up with all these things that there's no way in the world he could know unless there is a spiritual thing.
Today, James is 8 years old and finally free from the painful memories of James Houston Jr.'s death. The nightmares have stopped, but his love of airplanes continues to grow.
Okay, a few points mentioned in the video. One is the mention of the what they call drop tank. Those old planes, I'm not sure about modern fighter jets today, those old planes, they are so-called petrol tank, our terminology of their aviation turbine fuel tank. Their petrol tanks are what they call limited in size. The more petrol you carry, you cannot fly very fast. Okay, so what they do is they have a certain size, and if they have to fly long distances, they add another extended petrol tank. That is called a drop tank. They put at the bottom. For the rest of us, we don't know anything. Looks like a bomb, lah. But when they reach certain enemy territory, and the enemy also sends out their planes, you need to have aeroplane fighting with aeroplane. It's called a dogfight, lah, in the air, lah. Not turn here, turn there. So if you are still carrying petrol tank underneath, everything is slow. So you're very easy for you to get shot. So what they do is they eject. They throw away their spare petrol tank, make the plane lighter so they can move more easily in the air. But that also means that if they survive the fight, they may not have petrol enough to fly back home. That is the problem. This is the risk of all fighter pilots. They either crash because no fuel, or get shot, or crash in the sea. Like in Japan, there are a lot of islands there. So if they cannot fly back to the aircraft carrier, they just crash and hopefully they can get rescued. If not, they drown. This is the issue. The other thing about in the video, there was mentioned that when the little boy was 2 years old, having nightmares. And he said the plane was shot, was going to crash, and the boy, little boy, was lying on the back and trying to kick. What in real life those days, the pilot was trying to do is, since the plane was somewhat disabled, he tried to kick open the glass, whatever thing, cover, so that he can jump out, use parachute and survive. So today, of course, modern jets are very automated. Everything opens and it's called ejector seat. Those days, you literally have to lie on your back and kick out the thing. So those are very specific details for fighter pilot those days. So this is very convincing. The next video will also touch on this one, but giving even more details about that, what I call the war. But never mind, we continue with the Dhamma aspects. In Dhammapada verse 153, we find the Buddha mentioning, just after enlightenment, that he said that through many a birth in samsara, samsara basically meaning the cycle of birth and death, the Buddha said, through many a birth in samsara, wandered I, seeking but not finding the builder of this house. This house means the body. Sorrowful is repeated birth. And the next, what they call Dhammapada verse, mentions, 154, mentions, O house builder, thou art seen. Thou shalt build no house again. All thy rafters are broken. Thy rigid pole is shattered. The mind attains the unconditioned. Achieve is the end of craving. When they say the mind attains the unconditioned, unconditioned means nibbana. Now, the term unconditioned is frequently used in the Buddha's discourses, to mean nibbana. Now, why is this unconditioned? Why is this nibbana and how is it related to the word unconditioned? Now, the Buddha discovered underneath the Bodhi tree that everything in the universe, except for one thing, everything else in the universe is conditioned. The Pali word is called sankhara, means formations, is made up of something. But to make up something, it depends on other conditions, many conditions. So everything in our lives, everything in the universe, another part of the universe which we have not seen or experienced, everything is conditioned. As long as conditioned, it arises because of conditions, it stays for some time, and then it passes away. That means anything conditioned must pass away. Even the sun, even the planet, even our lives, we are conditioned. But in the whole of Buddhism, we are trying to attain Nibbana, unconditioned. So you do not make Nibbana. Okay? You get rid of craving, then you can see Nibbana, feel Nibbana, experience Nibbana. Okay, this is what it means by unconditioned. Now, again, I'd like to emphasize the teachings of the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 183, to avoid evil, do good, and purify your mind. Now, in purifying your mind, you are training the mind, developing the mind, to go towards the unconditioned. But to do that, you need to have certain foundations. The foundation is very important. Avoid evil, and then do good. Avoiding evil alone doesn't mean you are pure. You have not made yourself a bad person. That's all. You stop yourself from becoming worse and worse and worse. But you are stable. But after that, you need to progress and make yourself purer. And therefore, doing good is helpful. Now, these two especially generates wholesome coming energies that support you. So it means open doors for you, make your life easy. That means normal everyday life easy. A good family, a good job, good environment. Nobody disturbs you. But finally, that is just that. It stops there and gives you good rebirth and so on. But purifying your mind brings you higher and higher. That means not just enlightenment, but purifying your mind also have everyday benefits. You have more calmness. You have less stress in your life. Although the situation outside is very stressful for the average untrained person, that means who hasn't trained their mind, they don't know how to handle the stress, the pressure of work or family life and all that. And some of them, succumb to those stresses with a lot of hyperpressure and all those kind of things. But if you're able to manage it through your training in purification of your mind, you're able to go through it calmly. Going beyond that, that skills of purifying your mind actually help you towards, bring you towards enlightenment. So do not think that purifying your mind is essentially meditation. Of course, meditation of two main types. One is of tranquility meditation. Technically, it's called samatha type of meditation. Like loving kindness is tranquility to calm you down, to help you to manage stress and all that. The other type of meditation is called mindfulness, sati. That helps you to see what's going on, to understand why bad things happen to you, why good things happen to you. You understand, you're not affected. And of course, with mindfulness, only you can gain enlightenment. But also helped by tranquility meditation. So the two kinds of meditation are needed for enlightenment purposes. Okay, so these are the overall things you need to practice in our lives. Now, introducing another, Dr. Ian Stevenson, very famous. Through the ages, 20th century, a lot of investigation and documentation of such phenomena, the phenomena of coming back, to be reborn again, has taken place. And especially now, Dr. Ian Stevenson from a Western American University is very well known for this. He has spent almost 40 over years of his academic career just to collect all this information. And basically, his background, he was a medical doctor, had many scholarship papers to his credit, and the former head of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Virginia, and the director of the Division of Personality Studies at the University of Virginia. The later video I will show, the video will show excerpts of Dr. Ian Stevenson. His most famous book, The 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation, has influenced a lot of people. Here there is a picture of him. First, he gets news of somebody, usually in Asia, recalling, usually a child, recalling some strange facts, which is not to do with nowadays, to do with some ancient facts or last time facts. So he would take the trouble to fly over to Asia. In this case, he was in a Myanmar village interviewing somebody through an interpreter. He doesn't speak Myanmarese or Burmese. So he would speak to the child and try to record as much facts as possible. In the later videos, you will see that Professor Tucker, his student, mentions that he has collected so much, investigated and verified the information given by the child, that about 50% of cases brought to his attention have been thrown out. Okay, not valid and not don't have enough solid evidence. So the other 50% is founded. Okay, very often we have cases whereby what they call the child recollects something of a certain place, maybe from his country or another village. The interesting thing is the parents have not brought this child to that village, haven't been there. So you wouldn't know who is there or whatever. And when he actually brings the child there, very often the child knows how to jalan. like as if you've been staying there for years and years. But the fact that the parents themselves haven't been to the kampung, how in the world this child knows the back lane and whatever. And in one of the stories, very strange story, only the wife knows what's happening. And it was the wife who passed away and reborn. So when as a little child brought back to the village, the child was able to identify, oh, the children, her children, former children, by name, this is my husband by name, can bring to the house and go to their master bedroom, their bedroom, you know, and underneath the bed, uncover a brick, something hidden. The husband didn't know. She, as a housewife, she gets money from the husband, not monthly, you know, to sustain the house. And out of the money she used to buy vegetable and buy things for the household, she would try to save a little bit of money and she hid the money underneath. Only she knew. So when she passed away, nobody else in the house knows. So she was able to uncover the brick, take out the money. Oh, that is irrefutable evidence. Even the husband didn't know. So this kind of things happen. Here, another example. This is a more modern person, born with a scar on the chest. And this person, young man, was able to recollect some incident previously. Basically, he was shot with a shotgun. Means very modern. Shotguns are very modern. They're not talking about ancient recollection like using spears and bows and arrows. Now it's very modern. He could not kill by a shotgun wound. And with the information he was able to provide, called Dr. Stevenson, he was able to track back to a pathologist, forensic pathologist. When people get shot, people die, you might send to the hospital for bedah siasat. Modern Malaysia is called bedah siasat. Basically, a forensic pathologist to ascertain the cause of death. In this case, these are the sketches given made by the forensic pathologist as to the gunshot wound, point of entry, everything. And this is called official record. It linked back to this person. It matches. This forensic pathology report matches the birth scars. Of course, you're wondering, whatever a scar I got, maybe it's from past life. Maybe, but we do not know. But this indicates a link between the past life and the present day birthmarks. Now, back to the suttas. In the Mahasachaka Sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya Sutta number 36, I purposely mentioned the suttas and various, so that even if you don't key in the whole name like Mahasachaka Sutta, you key in MN36 and put the word sutta in Google search or whatever search engine you use, the sutta will come out. And if you want it in Chinese, in Sanskrit, in Pali, English, even in Bahasa Indonesia, it's available on the internet, even without you going to a library. So there's no excuse for modern day people not to have not read suttas. You can see it on your handphone, literally now. Okay? So, in the Mahasachaka Sutta, on the night of the Buddha's enlightenment, basically Vesak Eve, the first watch of the night, 6 to 10 p.m. on Vesak Eve, he meditated, and purified his mind, and the Bodhisattva developed retrocognitive. That means he directed his mind to recall his past lives. And in the sutta it's mentioned, when the mind was thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilement, pliant, malleable, steady, and so on, the Bodhisattva directed it to the knowledge of recollecting his past lives. And he recollected many of his past lives. One birth, two, five, 10, 50, 100, 1,000, 100,000. Now, this one is mind-boggling. Many aeons of cosmic contraction, many aeons of cosmic expansion, many aeons of cosmic contraction and expansion. This portion of the sutta, and there are a few other suttas where the Buddha mentions this again. If anybody will say, oh, Buddhism doesn't talk about origin of the world, they don't know what they're talking about. This is it. Where's the origin? There is no origin. Why? Many eons of cosmic contraction and expansion. What is cosmic contraction and expansion? We are talking about the universe. We are, our planet Earth is part of solar system. Solar system is one small little speck in the Milky Way, a galaxy called Milky Way, which is a spiral thing. There are thousands and thousands of galaxies in the universe. And in 1930, Professor Hubble discovered that the universe now is currently expanding. The universe is not one fixed size. It's the borders of the universe are growing, and the galaxies are moving away from each other. Okay, that was using a what I call the most powerful telescope on land in 1930s. Now, of course, you have the Hubble telescope, named after this astronomer, and they can measure the distances more accurately because don't have clouds and pollution to block his view. From space, he can see more clearly. So, astronomers have confirmed that this current universe is expanding. But the Buddha, without a telescope, is talking about universal contraction and expansion. So, scientists have only discovered part of the story. The Buddha is talking about it. So, this is very, very long time, you know, aeons and aeons. So, you can just imagine. Basically, in summary, our universe is expanding, contracting, expanding, and contracting. So, where got beginning? So, effectively, there is no beginning. So, if anybody says that the Buddha didn't talk about the origin of the world, that person is wrong. Okay, you can quote this sutta. Now, when he was at a certain place, certain birth, there I had such a name, belong to such a clan, had such an appearance. Okay, I wonder what that means. Appearance, does it mean this kind of face, this kind of features? Or maybe in the alien world, you have one head, three hands, and three legs. You cannot assume that all aliens have two hands and two legs. He's still alive, he's still a human, but different kind of being. Such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such the end of my life. So means they are born, they have pleasure and pain, they also pass away. Passing away from that state, I re-arose somewhere else. And this is the first knowledge I attained in the first night, the first watch of the night, from 6 to 10 p.m. on Vesak Eve. Now, let's talk about Dr. Brian Weiss. Brian Weiss is a traditional psychotherapist, was astonished and skeptical when one of his patients began recollecting his past traumas. What this doctor does is he used regression hypnosis. That means hypnotize you and go backwards in time. Usually, this kind of therapist, after making you go into hypnosis, they will ask you, go to the time where you became frightened of small spaces. Sometimes when we are children, when you are very naughty children, your adult in the house, mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, will scold you and then lock you up in underneath the staircase or a very small room and very dark, no light. You know. When we grow up, we even sit in the stand in the lift, go into the lift, we also feel threatened. Really. It's called a claustrophobic thing. So if you want to cure this kind, some of these psychotherapists will place you under hypnosis and ask you to go back to the time where you felt frightened by small, dark spaces. Usually, most of the people's experience go back to the earlier portion of your life, which you have forgotten when you were a child. But this patient went very far back, beyond this life. This is why he gave this psychotherapist a shock. And all his conversations with the patient are recorded, and he actually took the trouble to verify some of the things the patient said, like flying to another country and all that, past life experiences. So basically, Dr. Brian Weiss is a graduate of Columbia University, Yale Medical School, Chairman Emeritus of Psychiatry at the Mount Sinai Medical Center in Miami. The first and most famous book is Many Lives, Many Masters, which you can buy from your nearby bookshops. Since then, he has published many, many books. Why don't I show you a video interview with Oprah Winfrey?
Thank you. Back in 1980, Dr. Brian Weiss was using hypnotherapy with a patient named Catherine to discover the roots of her paralyzing phobias. In his book, Many Lives, Many Masters, he writes that during one of their sessions, Catherine regressed back to a time before she was born, recounting a past life as an 18-year-old girl named Aranda from the year 1863 BC. Sounds crazy, I know. So, okay, you are a Yale-trained, Columbia-trained doctor, psychiatrist, agnostic, and this woman is saying these things. Things are coming out of her mouth that are literally unbelievable.
Right.
What did you make of that? I mean, so she finishes her hour session. I mean, I would have let her go 2 hours that day if I were you. She finishes her session, and you say what?
I said, I don't know what this is, but I could already see. It was intense. It was cathartic. It was emotional. And I didn't know why.
Because when you're hypnotized, you remember everything you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. It's not something that you forget. You remember it. And
so she probably couldn't believe it herself.
For her, it was easier than for me. Because it was so, yeah, to believe it. It was so intense for her. She was experiencing it with emotions and visually and sounds and other senses. But it became easier over the weeks that followed for her to change her worldview. But for me, I needed more because I was such a skeptic, so left brain, so academic.
Yeah.
And I started already explaining it away. Like, oh, maybe she saw movies or read about this, or maybe it's the collective unconscious that the psychoanalyst Carl Jung wrote about,
yeah,
or something else going on. But when she came back in the next week, her symptoms were disappearing.
Despite his skepticism, Dr. Weiss started to notice a connection between Catherine's paralyzing phobias and the traumas she says she suffered in her past lives. Remember her fear of water? Well, in one of her past lifetimes, she remembered drowning in a tidal wave. Could that explain her phobia?
And that was even weirder to me as a formerly trained psychiatrist, that how does imagination or fantasy cure symptoms that have been there since she was a little girl? It doesn't. So there had to be something deeper, and that was the beginning for me. But it still took that other stuff for me to...
So what was the moment that you were convinced that what she was saying was real and that this was something bigger than you had expected?
It was about the fourth or fifth time, and she died in one of these lifetimes in the past, floated above, replicating all of the near-death experience work. She had never heard of that or read anything. And then...
Had you?
I had read...
Never heard of NDEs.
Yes, I had read Raymond Moody's
book
from the 70s, yeah. And so, Life After Life.
Yes. Raymond Moody is a psychologist, author, and researcher who coined the term near-death experience in the late 70s. By interviewing people who had NDEs, he found they'd experienced many of the same things, like floating above their bodies, watching the scene below, meeting friends and relatives who'd previously passed, traveling through a long tunnel, feeling no pain and a sense of peace.
So I was aware of that, but in a clinical, academic sense, because I didn't really experience that myself. I didn't know if I believed it,
mm-hmm,
but I knew about his work.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my office, feeling very cold, icy cold at this moment. She said, there are two people here to see you, your father and your son. Now, she's in this hypnotized state. She's in between lifetimes now, just floating there, but still in a deep state. And she didn't know anything about me. I don't even have diplomas hanging in my office. So she's telling me, your father's here and your son.
So she doesn't know that your father has passed or not passed.
No.
And this was before you could Google your doctor.
It was before the internet. It was yes, before you could Google your doctor.
Yes.
Before all this, she didn't know anything about my father. She tells me my daughter is named after him. Amy was. She's here now. And she was named after him. His English name was Alvin. His Hebrew name was Avram. She didn't know this. She's a Catholic woman from New England. She said, your father...